someone to as a partner in life, or I want to, you know, feel better, I want to find a solution to my health problems. And that's there's nothing wrong with those wants. Like I've also been saying in these satsangs, all there is truth. So those are all completely valid, worthwhile desires. But they're limited. They're probably actually surprisingly not even what you really, really want. And so that adding in those reallys helps shift to a more fundamental desire. And one way to get there is to say, if I had what I want, if I could get what I wanted, if I had a better job, if I had a partner in my life, if I had healed or cured my health problems, what would that allow? And when you ask the question that way, especially if you kind of peel, sometimes there's several layers, like, well, if I had a better job, then I could have more money. Okay, if you had more money, what would that allow? Well, if I had more money, I could live in a better neighborhood and drive a nicer car. Okay, if you could live in a better neighborhood and drive a nicer car, what would that allow? And ultimately, what it will come down to for most of our desires is that what we really want is a quality of our own true nature. What we really want is an experience of something like peace or joy, happiness or love or clarity or strength. And so these are qualities of what we are. So here's where that seemingly outer directed question, what do I really, really want? Especially when you put in those reallys, it deepens the question and starts to actually be about who you are, about having a fuller experience of who you really are. And so by asking, what do I really, really want? And possibly getting in touch that what you really want, if you had the better job, more money, a nicer neighborhood, a better car, that what that would all allow is for you to just relax, just be at peace. Or it might allow you to feel happy. At least you think. And so once you've identified what it is you really, really want, it's actually possible to, in a sense, redirect your effort, if you want to call it that, your exploration. Because joy or peace or love are all qualities of what you already are. And so once you've identified what it is you really, really want, it changes the perspective on the whole question. It makes it about experiencing more of yourself. It shifts the emphasis, because there's still, again, nothing wrong with finding a better job or, seeking and finding a partner in life. It's just what that is really about is experiencing more love, then you can actually go there first. You can experience that quality of your true nature, then move out into the world from there. It'd be a totally different experience of seeking peace or joy or love. In fact, it wouldn't be an experience of seeking. It would be more an experience of expressing those qualities. So that's very general, everything I just shared about these questions. Who am I? What am I? The question, how do I live my life in this world and this society? And then that in-between question, which is, what do I really, really want? And when we hold those questions, and especially when we get familiar with them, when we're able to follow those questions, either follow them inward with the who am I, what am I, or follow them outward with the question, how do I live this, how do I live my life in this world? Or that if we explore that place in between, which is, what do I really, really want? As we explore those questions, I don't know if you have a sense of this. I talked about it last week as different levels of truth. Another way of saying it is that these are different perspectives on what's going on here. And as we follow these questions, I'm moving my arms back and forth. It's like as we follow these questions in and out, and in between, explore very much everything in between and everything at our absolute core and everything that presents itself, including very at times frightening or tragic things like nuclear war. It's like as we move with these questions in and out, in and out, in and out, we develop a flexibility of perspective. We are able to see a question like, what do I do about these conspiracy theories and the possibility, the very real possibility of nuclear war? How does that fit into my life, into who I really am, and into the question, what do I really, really want? And each one of those kind of different levels of our being would have a different perspective on that. And so if you go very, very far into the question, who am I? What am I? If that question takes you into a very deep experience of your pure, spacious existence as consciousness, then it's a funny thing to say, and this is not to minimize the true tragedy and horror that any kind of war is. But from that biggest perspective of who am I, it would still not be ultimately a problem. What you are cannot be harmed. And so that's a very useful perspective actually in putting everything else into perspective. Because relative to who you truly are, there's nothing that can harm you. There's no problem that is a play, a fascinating drama unfolding within what you truly are. But again, the ideal in my sense of things is not to escape in a sense into that bigger perspective and hide there. If you don't, if you don't ever take that perspective, it can all seem quite overwhelming. But if you can visit that perspective and then come back to this world, come back to this life, to this human experience. And so to relate this question about, because the person who wrote asked, that the thought of a nuclear war and these things that she reads suggesting that's something that's coming. That those thoughts make her contract. And she says, therefore, so it must not be true, which is in reference to an aspect of my teaching where I talk about the truth is what opens our heart and quiets our mind. And that something that has the opposite effect, that causes us a strong sense of contraction in our awareness, in our being, in our heart, and makes our mind busier, that it's less true. And so that's the first point I would make specific to this question is that the thought or the thought that that's not true. In fact, that's the reason why it kind of hooks us, is because of course it's true that it's possible that there would be a nuclear war. And so that, even if an experience makes you contract, it doesn't mean that it's false. It doesn't mean that it's a total fiction. And even something, it's so strange too, because even something that's totally fiction, like if somebody suggested that, that we're all going to turn into strawberry jam in the next, 30 days from now, that we're going to enter into a new part of the galaxy and it's going to turn us all into strawberry jam. And so, I mean, I'm laughing because that's such a clearly fictional perspective on another work problem to worry about, that it just makes me laugh. And so something that's totally irrational or irrelevant The only truth something like that has is that it's true that I can think up something like that. I have a silly mind and I can come up with such a problem to worry about. I do not want to turn into strawberry jam. And so, you know, my mind can go there, but it doesn't have any reality. There are no strawberry jam-based weapons out there that are going to, you know, turn the human race into strawberry jam. So it's actually a much smaller truth even than the conspiracy theories or the ideas that we may be facing a nuclear war sometime soon, because it's even more ridiculously remotely, you know, it's so remotely possible that we could really call it, for practical purposes, say it's impossible. So all there is truth. And a small truth makes us contract. Now, when it comes to this very rich and multi-level, multi-dimensional thing called life, it gets a lot more challenging. This, you know, to say that the heart and our sense of awareness can instantly show us how true or not true something is really just the starting point. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that therefore we can instantly kind of figure everything out because we just have to listen to our heart. No, there's like so many levels to every experience and so many of these different perspectives that I was talking about. And some of them are very profoundly true. Some of them are, you know, more in the middle. They have relevance. They might have practical usefulness. And some of them are very small and very contracting and not actually that useful or relevant. And so that comes to, you know, the last part of the question is what should we do to avoid nuclear war or protect ourselves? The person asked if I myself do something about that particular issue, like preventing, you know, working to prevent nuclear war or preparing for it. And that's getting down into the smaller details. I mean, it sounds, like I said, so it's all relative. So obviously deciding what to have for lunch is still a much more, even smaller detail of our lives than deciding what to do about some of the bigger issues facing us as a society. But it's still smaller than the questions of who am I and what is my true nature. And so when you get down to that level, when you get that specific, and when your perspective is very much about what do I do, how do I do it, where, what's the right approach, how do I make, you know, how do I help save the world from nuclear war, or how do I protect myself if it was going to happen? Those are never going to be ultimate questions. They're never going to have a profound expansive effect on us, and yet we can still explore them. And also when you get into that small territory, you could say that relative a territory of experience, there's less and less a sense of there being a right answer or a wrong answer. And this is actually where listening to your heart can be very practical. This is where, in a sense, the rubber meets the road, where the willingness to have a flexibility of perspective that includes the willingness to ask these kinds of questions and address them and find out what's really true for you. Because, again, at this level, there's no right or wrong answers. If someone wants to do what they imagine would be helpful in preparing for nuclear war, that's a perfectly valid response. If somebody wants to become involved in perhaps a political way or you know, in some way to help turn this, you know, society, this culture away from those kinds of horrible outcomes, that's a totally appropriate response. If someone, you know, when they check inside their own heart, they find that involving themselves with those kind of things excessively or a lot is really contractive. It's not really, in a sense, it's not their calling. It's not what they're here to do. Then that's a valid answer to that question. I'll answer more generally. The person asked, do I myself do something about the possibility of nuclear war? I personally am not, drawn to being actively involved with that, in trying to prevent it or preparing my little corner of the world, creating some kind of survival mechanism so that I could live through such a thing. And that's just where I'm drawn to in this life. It isn't at all a case of denial. It's not, that's not, recognizing that something is not very true for you doesn't mean that you ever have to deny it or totally neglect it or, be unwilling to even speak about it or think about it or something like that. Instead, by recognizing that it's not really true for you, you can free yourself to focus on what has a more expansive, true quality for you. And for me, it's doing things like this. It's pointing people, pointing the world, as much as I'm able to, towards the essence of their being, towards the possibility for limitless joy and limitless peace and limitless love that has no conditions and has no requirements for it to be present. And it's interesting because even though something might be a smaller truth or a bigger truth for each person listening, whatever is true for you will still have an effect. The more, if your life is focused on bringing more light and more joy and more peace into the world, that's going to have some effect on how things turn out, where this world ends up. And however it turns out, it will still have had some effect. So again, getting right down to the nitty-gritty, that's where clearly, because any answer would be limited, there's only so much any of us can do, even if you are, president of the United States or something like that. There's only so much you can do. And so we're all in our human expression very limited. And so this flexibility of perspective, this ability to step out and see that it's all fine and that ultimately you cannot be harmed, can actually free you then to simply weigh the choices that you have, the possibilities that present themselves in your life, and take action if that seems to be, again, a calling, a bigger impulse than another possibility. And so in that sense, it's a little bit more expansive. I'd like to say a little bit more about this principle that you can discriminate how true things are by whether they expand you or contract you. And this would be simpler if the truth was something static, if the truth was somehow fixed and solid and that was it, and you tap it with a hammer and find out it's hollow, or you tap it with a hammer and find out that it's solid. You find out that it's something really true, or you find out, no, it's not very true. But the truth itself is always evolving, shifting, changing. It's alive. It has. It's dynamic, and everything affects everything else within this immensity of reality, of truth. And so I said it a moment ago. If you focus on being a person that brings light and love and peace and joy into the world, that will affect everything else ultimately in the universe, but definitely within your circle of friends, within your contacts, within their friends, within the culture at large, and energetically the whole planet. And so that shifts what's true. So, you know, and then of course, if you are, just as an extreme example, if you are posting information about that is truly about, you know, some sort of conspiracy theory, something that, I mean, now in this, in our current cultural environment, you know, there's this strange thing called fake news. And of course, that is an accusation that's leveled from all sides towards the other side of all issues right now. That, you know, that everybody's got their little piece of the truth. It's like the classic story about the blind man and the elephant. One of them has a hold over the tail and thinks an elephant is like a rope. Another one has a hold of one of the elephant's legs and thinks that an elephant is like a tree trunk. And the third one has a hold of the elephant's trunk and thinks that an elephant is like a big snake. And of course, they're all correct. They're all right. And so in this environment where there is everything from, you know, subtleties and emphasis and differences of opinion and an actual literal fake news where people are just to carry out an agenda they have, they're posting things that are just simply only the only truth they have is that they posted them. There's no reality outside of the viral post that pretends that something is true. And so we're all of those things are also just as someone bringing light and love and joy and peace into the world. All of these fake news, different levels of fake news, different degrees of fakeness, they all have an effect. And it's all always a question, kind of back to those three main questions. Well, two main questions, and then the third one I added in the middle. It's like, how do I live my life? Do I live my life either creating such or sharing or fighting against fake, you know, things that I think are fake or not true? And then if there seems to be more reality to the, you know, one person's conspiracy theory is another person's, blindingly obvious truth. And so do I go to work to try to prevent a horrible outcome, or to convince other people that it isn't just a conspiracy theory, that there really is something horrible happening? All of those questions, you know, how do I live my life? And yet, this is the direction when we are involved with the world, involved even with our own body, involved with the day-to-day practical elements, from the most personal to the most that affect our whole planet, or affect our whole country, or affect our family. That when we're focused in that direction, it's a perfectly valid, worthwhile use of our time. However, it's also very possible to get kind of stuck there, to have that the narrowness of perspective that's required to focus on these very at times real and or difficult problems, to get stuck in a focus on that. It's paradoxical, really, because it often makes us less effective at actually changing or solving or doing what we are called to do. We can get so overwhelmed by something like the thought of nuclear war at all that we don't even take the very simple steps that we could take. And so anytime you are, you know, feeling very contracted, it isn't a question of that's designed to, you know, to help you reject or deny or neglect anything about your life or about the world. But it is an indication. It is a like a feedback mechanism that is starting to show you that you're probably getting a little bit stuck in that narrower perspective, a little bit overly focused on how to fix or change or save the world, and leaving out a whole bunch of the rest of the truth. And so, you know, anytime you're contracted, it's not that something's wrong or bad, but it kind of invites another kind of question. It invites possibly a question like, what do I really, really want? What is it that I'm really about in this life? And that I don't know if you can feel it, even that sense of it kind of opening up the possibilities, giving you a broader view, a more complete perspective. Sometimes if you can't make that leap, you know, from, oh, but what about all this, and what about this problem, what about that problem, and then you say, what do I really, really want? No, I got to fix my problems. You can't make that leap. Another kind of in-between question, if you're sensing that something is contracting you and therefore is not as true as it possibly could be, it's not as big a perspective as you might possibly have about that situation, is to ask, okay, what else is true? So there's this, I mean, it's such a big, it's funny to talk about it as a small practical concern, because really, relatively, it's a very big practical concern, you know, the concern about nuclear war. But even then, you know, it's like, what else is true? What else is true? Is there love and peace and joy here? Is there any peace present right now inside in your experience? I've been doing this kind of work and this kind of satsang for 20 years now, and I've spoken with thousands of people. And it's interesting, I often ask the question, when someone, especially if someone says that what they really, really want is peace. And I'll ask them, I'll say, well, is there any peace present right now? Even the slightest amount, even the smallest sliver of peace. And I invite them to really, really sense inside, is there any peace here right now? You can do this right now. Just check. Is there any sense of peace? Whatever that really means for you. And as I said, I've asked thousands of people that question, and every single one, over 20 years, every single time, the person has said, well, yeah, there's some. Or there's a little, there's a little, you know, tiny bit. And that's amazing in itself. I don't know what your experience is right now when you check, but how about that? There's peace here. And what happens when you focus on it? Is it actually that small? Or is it, when you pay attention to it, does the sense of peace actually fill in or expand or become more solid, more real? And so that progression from, okay, here's the problem, here's a reality in our world that is, you know, a bit frightening, a bit would be tragic if it happened. And what else is true? What else is true is that right now there's also peace. Peace present within me. And you can actually check that peace that's within you. Is it contained within you? Or does peace actually fill the space all around you? And so in the midst of all of the again, very real, very human, very difficult problems that we all face, up to and including the world-threatening problems, it's also true right now that there is peace present. And if you focus on it, if you get familiar with that peace, you may discover that it's not only present, that it's limitless. That by focusing on it, you can start to experience that it has no boundaries. Where does that peace begin and end right now? And would that peace actually be harmed even if a bomb went off, even up to and including a nuclear bomb? Or would that peace still be here? Not to deny or neglect, the small problems, the big problems that we all experience in this human experience, but to again put them in perspective, to give that flexibility, to step back, to notice that peace itself cannot be harmed, even by war. And again, paradoxically, that can often, if that is something that you feel really called to do something about. The person who asked the question mentions how she's a mother. And so it's not even just herself that she feels this concern. She feels it for her child or children. And so, there might be a very, even from that place of peace and limitless joy, limitless acceptance of what is, there still might be a very true calling to take action. And everything from signing a petition, sharing information on social media, joining protests, running for political office, donating to worthy causes, giving your time, your effort, your caring to a worthy cause. And there's no right or wrong answer. If that flows towards preventing nuclear war, if that flows towards preparing so that at least you have a sense that there's a chance you could carry forward from that experience, that's great. The question always is to also, step back for a moment and see, like, okay, what else is true? How true is this particular cause for me? Or how true is that particular cause for me? So that's where the expansion and contraction of our awareness as a kind of guidance system. That's where it's appropriate. Not as a kind of absolute denial or rejection of anything, not as an absolute or total acceptance of anything, or embrace of something, like becoming a maniac, or a, what's the word, like a fundamentalist, anti-nuclear activist that, is willing to carry out violence themselves in order to try to prevent a nuclear war. I mean, I can't imagine that those kind of actions will come from a place of an open heart, of an expanded sense of awareness. Again, there's no wrong choices, but there are choices that are truer for you today, right now. And everything you do and everything you don't do will change what's true in both in your personal experience and in the collective experience we all have. Because again, the truth is alive. It's not static. And so anything that you do, it's possible that that will change you, change the world in a way that it no longer is true to do that. I think I spoke about this a little bit last week in a totally different context when I said that a very strange phenomenon is that if you find a spiritual practice that is very effective and very powerful for you, which is a very unique, very individual question, because I think I shared how my friend Jeffrey Martin has found that most spiritual practices are only useful for about 5% of the people who do them. And so if you happen to find that one for you, that experience itself of a spiritual practice actually, you know, shifting you, changing you, even possibly triggering an awakening, a realization, whatever your term is for that opening of your awareness, that itself has changed you. And that it's very possible that at a certain point, it actually won't be appropriate anymore. That, you know, the medicine that cures you of an illness or a problem would be harmful if you keep taking it even after you're cured. And so anything you do in response to a personal health issue, to a societal problem, or to address a spiritual longing inside of you for greater truth, even when you effectively change the direction of our human society and or create a deeper realization within yourself, things that's that truth that's alive that has now changed. And so that spiritual practice may not fit anymore. That healing practice may not be necessary and may even be harmful. And of course, it would be, you know, be kind of silly to keep protesting and marching after all the nuclear weapons have been destroyed. You know, it's like, yeah, you might want to, you know, again, you don't have to be in denial. You might want to try and make sure that they don't come back. But to, you know, be an extreme advocate for the ending of nuclear weapons after they're all gone doesn't make much sense. So that's kind of an extreme example. Hopefully we'll get there sooner rather than later. And just as hopefully you'll have your next awakening, your next realization sooner rather than later. But when whatever comes of your efforts and of your experiences, it will evolve the truth. It will change you and it will change the world. And so these questions, who am I? How do I live my life? And what do I really, really want? They're evolving, they're changing. There's no final answer. There's no complete answer to any of those questions. It's something that we can always discover more about our ultimate nature. We can always discover more about how to more effectively, more productively, to live our life in a more fulfilling way, how to make all of the, you know, practical aspects of our life unfold in a more graceful and satisfying manner. And in that in-between realm, to allow our deepest desires to themselves to evolve and to open us to new aspects of, see, I call it essence. I call the aspect of our true nature, the aspects, it's actually plural, the aspects of our true nature that function in the world. So that question, how do I live my life, is not really disconnected from a question like, what do I really, really want? Because the most effective way to function in the world is to stay in touch with our essence, with our being. And not just the absolute, ultimate truth of our being, but these more relative aspects of our being, like peace and joy and love. When you are filled with authentic and true sense of your limitless capacity for joy, then it's kind of a natural outcome that you are more effective in the world, and it's definitely a more satisfying experience of being alive as a human being. So someone typed in, is that true? Have all the nuclear weapons ever been destroyed? I was using it purely as a hypothetical. And so if that, I mean, I'm not saying that that is the case. I remember years ago reading a wonderful series of books by Jane Roberts, where she channeled this being named Seth. And he just had a great knack for kind of blowing my mind with all these strange perspectives on reality. And one of them was that there are many, many, many different versions of reality, which is actually now a part of modern day quantum physics and that kind of thing, that there may be multiple universes. And what Seth actually said in one of his books was that in some versions of this world, of this planet, there are no nuclear weapons. In other realities, other experiences of this planet, we've already blown ourselves up. We've already pretty much destroyed the planet with nuclear weapons. And then everything in between. So, someone's still typing about that never happened and reality. And like I said earlier, there are all different degrees of reality. One very, very limited and definitely potentially dangerous level of reality is believing something that is really just a thought. That, you know, some truths are so small, they have no reality other than as a thought. And so that doesn't mean that you can't think them and that you can't consider them and that you can't even possibly work to make them a reality, such as the end of nuclear weapons on this planet. But, you know, it would be clearly a kind of, you know, strange denial to pretend that that was actually true today. So it's a dance. It's a dance between the biggest truths and the smallest truths, including a very beautiful and very positive ideal that we find a way to bring an end to the risk of nuclear holocaust. So you don't have to deny or neglect that possibility that maybe we could find a way, even though it is from an absolute perspective true or false, it seems like it's more in the false category. But it's still a possibility, so it's not completely false. All right, I see someone wants to know what to call today's talk. Wow. I think I would call it The Three Questions That Guide the Spiritual Journey. That kind of covers the whole range of what we spoke about. And so all of that from one question that someone sent in, and I'll just remind again that that's what I love. I love, at least hopefully, speaking about something that's relevant, that's important to you, to those of you who come and listen in. And so if you are, even if you typed in or sent in a question and I'm just talking away like I did for the last hour, feel free to, again, as I said earlier, raise your hand, type in, just as someone did in response to this, you know, kind of hypothetical that we could have a world with no nuclear weapons. You know, feel free to try to pin me down to get the specific questions that you have or the questions that come up in response to what I'm saying, to get them also addressed or explored at least. I often think the best thing I can hope for is that your questions get bigger, that your questions get more flexible, that your perspectives shift in a way that actually possibly brings more questions and fewer fixed or rigid or, you know, unchanging answers, because the truth itself is evolving. The truth itself is growing, changing, unfolding, discovering new possibilities within itself. And we will have to see where it goes in the next few moments, in the next few days, in the next few weeks, and most likely I will be, God willing, I'll be back here next Wednesday, and we'll pick up this conversation then. So thanks all for joining in, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Remember, you can email me anytime with questions. Just mention that there are questions for this gathering. Bye for now. I'll let go of the mic.